the pigskin bag's handle, revealing a dozen half-sovereigns sewn into a sealed silk tube. I took 3 coins, more than his work was worth, and gave them to the man. "That also buys your silence," I told him, nodding towards the ruined bag. He left without another word. It was then I turned to the rogue's wallet and found my first real clue and proof of his name. The clue came in the form of a train timetable and the name from a scrap of newspaper. Sherlock Holmes, younger brother to Mycroft and pupil of Professor James Moriarty. Almost every detail in the report was wrong. The events described took place at Saint-Jean, not Pau, in August 71, not March 72. But the scribbler was right about one thing. There had been a scandal. When I put my mind to things, I can make them happen quickly. So it proved in engineering my next meeting with the elusive Mr. Holmes. The man had money, my money. He had no need to visit the town underlined in his railway timetable, but he would visit it just the same. I felt his heart beneath his shirt, and it had been racing. He lived for the challenge. No man is so poor he has to jump in front of 4 galloping horses. I would have taken Hunter with me, for he is a coachman beyond the ordinary. But the moment Hunter finally realized the crash on the road through Kingston upon Thames had not been an accident, and one of his best greys had been struck down in the course of a simple confidence trick, he vowed to hunt and kill the men responsible. He did so with such barbarity that I cannot even bring myself to put his threats down upon the page. Choosing Edwards instead, I took a 2-seater hansom drawn by a single horse and a huge cloak in which to disguise myself. I chose an open-top carriage because I was interested to see how Mr. Holmes would handle his fall with no roof on which to somersault. The city to which we travelled was barely more than a Hampshire town with pretensions to history. It was, however, well chosen. Winchester High Street is long and sloping and overlooked by a grain merchant's and a general store, both busy with yeoman farmers, plump wives and red-faced gentlemen, the kind of people one expects to see in such a place. We wasted a morning hunting for the brass plate, newly put up on the pillar of a narrow house in St. Peter's Street, and the afternoon checking that both rogues were in the city, and then Edwards spent his evening in the kind of tavern used by coachmen and servants. I was French, apparently, he was pleased with that touch, newly arrived from Paris, and I spoke little English and greatly valued my privacy. Small wonder the brothers Holmes found us impossible to resist. They took it in turns to watch my hotel for the rest of that night, only abandoning their watch when Edwards strode from his nearby lodgings to prepare my coach. Vite, vite! As instructed, he conveyed me down the high street slightly faster than was decent, and as we passed the Buttercross, with its collection of ragged urchins seated around the base, a man stepped absent-mindedly into the road in front of us and was sent flying. A woman screamed, and Edwards began to apply the brake. A farmer stepped into the road to make sure we did not try to escape, and then stepped back quickly when Edwards took his hand from the lever for a few seconds. This time round, the horse was unhurt, and my carriage still whole, which meant that all of the crowd's attention could be concentrated on the fallen man. "He needs a doctor," said a woman. "Such a terrible accident. He needs..." "Madame," I said, clambering down, "I am a doctor, and as it happens, I am familiar with such accidents, having seen one almost identical only last week." This time, when she fainted, it was with no elegant twist or display of ankle. She merely crumpled and hit her head upon the curb hard enough to make her nose bleed. "Mr. Holmes, allow me." Taking Sherlock's leg, I pulled, twisted, and pushed it until I felt the bone slot back into place. Someone in the crowd nodded in approval and allowed that I would make a good vet. As Edwards carried the unconscious woman to safety, I turned my attention to the man on the ground. In the few seconds it had taken me to adjust his leg, I had watched Mr. Holmes check all 4 exits from the Buttercross and realize instantly that these were closed. He'd noted Edwards carry the woman towards a waiting police van and seen his brother appear and disappear at the sight of trouble. Not that this would be a problem. Lestrade had made a call to the chief constable of Hampshire, one of the few men in the county to possess a telephone.